Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another really good revision history podcast with me, Mr. Hutchison, and we are continuing with our Medicine Review time course 1250 to present day, and now we start looking at individual pieces of history and different characters and events. And I'm going to move through this course sort of chronologically now, building up that bank of evidence. If you want an overview of the course and a breakdown of the exam, please do listen to the previous podcast, episode 1, where I go through a sort of overview of everything you need to know, really, and sort of conceptual focuses you need in your mind as we go through the course. But today's podcast is all about one man, and that man is Hippocrates. So that's what this course does, folks. It focuses on individuals as well as events. And as always, you need to think about their contribution to medicine, the impacts they had, both short-term and long-term, focusing overall on continuity and change. So what was staying the same between the eras and what was changing? And how far or to what extent did these characters, these events, lead to change? So we look at Hippocrates, and actually, although the EdXL course starts in 1250, which of course is sort of medieval era, we do need to look at Hippocrates and indeed Galen in the next podcast, even though these two guys were practicing their medicine long before the start of our course in 1250. So for example, Hippocrates, born in 460 BC. So that's a long, long time before the course starts. But we need to know about him because his ideas were still being used by medieval doctors at the start of our course in 1250. So even though when our course starts, Hippocrates is long, long since dead, his ideas are still being used. So of course, a lot of continuity there, but sort of negative continuity or regression. So Hippocrates, as I say, was born in 1250 on the island of Kos. He was Greek, and he was born at the height of the Greek Empire, when they were a sort of dominant feature of in Europe in terms of culture, really. So culturally, extremely significant. Of course, the Greeks responsible for huge strides forwards in terms of mathematics and philosophy. You know, think of sort of Plato, Aristotle, and Pythagoras, characters like that. Hippocrates is no different, of course, but we're talking about medicine rather than those other things. So Hippocrates, born on the island of Kos, 460 BC, and his whole thing, or what he pioneered, was a movement away from supernatural beliefs. So the Greeks believed in a pantheon of gods. So not monotheistic, not a single god. They believed in a pantheon of gods, so all responsible for different areas of the human existence. And it was actually a god by the name of Asclepius who was responsible for health and well-being. And people, by and large, when they fell ill, blamed the gods and would be encouraged to pray to Asclepius in order to get better. And they would go to a place called an Asclepion, which is like a large complex, which included a place called an Abaton, which is where they would go and pray that Asclepius would cure them. And what Hippocrates did is he sort of changed that. Of course, people still did pray to gods. They still did believe in supernatural beliefs for the causes of medicine, and treatments were still often based around prayer and supernatural treatments. But Hippocrates started the move away from that. He started the move towards more rational explanations for disease and more rational treatments. So he encouraged doctors to look for natural treatments rather than just playing the god for health. So he, you know, encouraged the use of herbal treatments and things like that. And most of his treatments and indeed diagnoses were based upon his idea of the four humours. So the four humours were four liquids, if you like, and he decided that it was these four liquids that made up the body. So it was blood, yellow bile, black bile, and phlegm. Now, even though we know by our modern standards that that is incorrect. It's a rational explanation for disease. You know, it makes sense as part of the human experience. You know, this is quite gruesome, by the way, guys, a bit disgusting, I apologise. But, you know, stuff that comes out of you when you're ill or otherwise generally fall into those four categories, don't you? You know, if you've got nosebleed, for example, you know, blood, yellow bile, if you're sick, black bile coming out the other end, and phlegm, you know, if you're sneezing and things like that. So Hippocrates looked at this, like, ah, okay, right. So if, you know, you are one of these humours is escaping your body. I'm trying to put this as politely as possible. If one of these humours is escaping the body, it's because you've got an imbalance of these humours. And his treatments were based around purging, which is encouraging more of a substance to come out of you, either by making you sick or making you go to the toilet more. And, you know, it was about rebalancing these humours. So, that's what he believed in. And as I say, even though, you know, very inaccurate by our standards, you can see that now at least Hippocrates and the Hippocratic doctors, his followers, were starting to look for rational explanations for disease and starting to treat people rather than just relying upon prayer. It wasn't the only thing he did as well. He actually wrote his books down, became known as the Hippocratic Collection. Most importantly, this allowed other doctors to learn his methods and perhaps even improve upon them or build upon them. So that's extremely important for that sort of long-term impact. And whilst we're on that long-term impact, he also invented the Hippocratic Oath. Now, this is an oath. It's a promise that was created by Hippocrates to give people, you know, more confidence in their doctors. And it basically outlines, it's a promise that sort of suggests that they will keep high standards and that they will continue to learn, they will continue to be the best possible doctors they can be, and basically be ethical, all right? And the Hippocratic Oath, folks, is still taken today by doctors. And this was started by Hippocrates, a way of sort of guaranteeing that the treatment you would be receiving by a Hippocratic doctor would be quality. The other thing he did was observation, clinical observation. Sounds so obvious to us now because, you know, when we go to the doctor, you know, they'll tap away on the computer and bring up your records and you've got, you know, your entire medical history there. That's you know, a form of clinical observation, I suppose, you know, where they know the illnesses that you've faced in the past, so they can see patterns, they can treat you, and then they get you back in and they'll ask you how that treatment's gone, they'll see whether it's working, if not they'll try something else. So it's this sort of long approach to treatment, you know, observing that Hippocrates pioneered. So, you know, he really championed the idea or the importance of observing and carefully recording symptoms so you can see the development of diseases, you can see the effect of the cure, and if it's not working, you can try something else, you can get your patients back, and you can work on them over time to make them better. And that is the idea of observation and recording that Hippocrates introduced. So, Hippocrates then. Hippocratic Oath, Hippocratic Collection of Books, Natural Treatments and Health, Observing and Recording Clinical Observation, and of course the idea of the four, or the theory of the four humours. But overall, ladies and gentlemen, it was the movement away from supernatural beliefs towards more rational explanations of belief, more rational treatments of disease that Hippocrates is credited with, and that is why he's important. And the theory of humours, of the four humours, was still being used by doctors to both explain disease and treat disease in 1250 when our course starts. Okay, now bearing in mind he was born in 460 BC and died in 370 BC. So, you know, it's 2,000 years or so where his ideas are being used and don't really get challenged. Now, we'll look into the reasons why those ideas aren't challenged in a later podcast. But essentially, for his day in 460 BC, whatever, you know, he is absolutely a pioneer. You know, he's known as the father of modern medicine, and there's a reason for that. You know, moving away from supernatural diseases, supernatural explanations to more rational explanations for disease is a big deal. Hippocratic Oath, clinical observation, you know, all huge strides forward for their day. But by 1250, the fact that medical progress hadn't moved on significantly perhaps, well, represents continuity, but also represents stagnation and regression. Okay, folks, nice short one for you today. Next podcast will be all about Galen, another ancient doctor whose ideas were still being practiced in 1250. I hope you found that useful. And as always, keep working hard. Bye-bye.